The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's July the 2nd, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's in Normal, Illinois. And then a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, USDA reports on ethanol co-product feeding trends. South Korea and the United States have a trade agreement, and 5 years of TPA have helped grow U.S. trade. I'll have more later in the program, and then we'll hear about how the law here in the United States and internationally has managed to cope with the increasing number of genetically modified plants entering the marketplace. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby July wheat at $5.69.5, the settlement price there 12.5 cents lower. September's at $5.83.25, down 13.75, and December wheat down 13 cents at $5.97.5. July corn gained a penny for the day at $3.30.5 on their settlement price. September's at $3.39.75, down 1/4, and December futures at $3.50, down 3/4 for the day. July soybean futures at $8.65, 15 cent higher. August at $8.71, up 15.25. And November soybeans at $8.97.75, they were 16 cents higher on the afternoon. July bean meal futures up $6.60 at $2.35.80. July bean oil at $36.73, that's up 0.10. And the feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange finished 60 cents lower at $110.95 in the August contract. Live cattle August contract at $89.67.5, down 60 as well. And the October futures were 25 cents lower at $94.47.5. July lean hogs at $70.47.5, down 75 cents on the afternoon. Outside markets, August crude oil at $71.06 a barrel, down or rather up at this hour, 38 cents. The CRB index trading at 316.76, up 1.02, that's 1.02. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,516 is now up just about 109 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me how things pursued over the weekend as we managed to open the trading session Sunday night after a pretty harsh down day in the corn pit and the wheat pit on Friday and a big up day in the bean pit.
Yeah, beans picked up the steam in the overnight trade after the opening there at 6:30 last night. It zoomed right up, made the high at 9:03, and first 20 minutes of trade, then sort of backed off overnight, made a little bit of profit taking, reached the goal of $9 for a lot of technicians and traders. And throughout the session today, we sort of backed and filled, but late in the session here, we were able to crack that $9, make new highs by a half a cent in the pit and 3/4 cent. In the electronic trade, finished close to $9, not over $9. Trade feels that if we stay above $9, we get above $9, we can run to this 920, then 940 area. But we're pricing in the USDA numbers there from Friday, of course, smaller acreage. Some of the estimates are now that we could be looking at a 200 million bushel carryout with the present yield of 41.5 bushels to the acre. If you keep demand everything consistent, that's not any room for any weather. problems yet, or rust or anything. So beans are sort of in the driver's seat. Also, beans saw support from the outside markets. Crude oil is up over 59 cents a barrel, gold and silver higher. And we saw some fund buying. We saw funds starting to come in the complex. Today's first day of the month, first day of the new quarter. And this fund buying is looking for a home, and I think we saw that in quite a few of the other markets. And this fund buying's here to stay. There's quite a few funds showing some pretty good returns. We've just been set up to invest in commodity funds ourselves or any fund that trade commodities. And some of the stuff we're looking at is some good now past performance, not indicative of future returns, but some of these funds are cranking out 14 to 22% returns. And if those type of returns, you're going to continue to see the public move that way. If anybody's interested in those, we can send you a disclosure document on that. But that was part of it, whereas, as you mentioned there, corn struggled, wheat struggled. Corn fundamentally, when you look at that supply-demand balance sheet with the extra acres, analysts are in this 1.3, 1.5 billion bushel carryout with the current yield. If yield would improve, corn carryout could quickly climb to 1.7. And with those types of carryouts, it's not going to be any urgency there to step up and buy corn futures anytime soon unless we change the weather pattern here. We'll see what this afternoon's crop conditions report shows. A lot of the trades looking for improvement in the beans, 1 to 3%. Corn conditions are expected to improve 1 to 3%. On the corn, though, you know, we're in the good part of pollination in a lot of the Midwest here. The forecast is somewhat favorable now, right, looking at below normal temperatures and sort of normal precip. Some of the longer-term models are trying to bring in the ridge here July 12th through the 16th. The midday model showed maybe triple digits in the western belt. The fear is that could move a little bit to the east. Been talking to quite a few listeners who've been traveling up in the north-northwest, up to Iowa, South Dakota, and they're seeing a lot of fields just knee-high. So when you look at this afternoon's crop conditions report and look at the weather maps, I think a lot of the trade is going to be watching this northwest here and see how that develops there, Todd.
Yeah, so weather could return, I suppose, in the next week or 2 weeks as something that takes the front seat in the corn market, but really has not as of yet. Still trading those numbers. Corn, after some heavy losses on Friday, really on the overnight trade and the day trade, managed to consolidate pretty decently or hold on to the level that they had dropped to. Is this a pretty good place for the corn market to hang in?
Some stabilization. You look at the momentum indicators, RSIs, it's incredibly oversold. We've lost over 90 cents from the highs there. And, you know, the corn market's just been a disaster for the bull here for the last 2 weeks. And so we're in a position here where maybe we can stabilize. But some of the technical stuff now points to a drop to this 320 level in the December futures. Some are trying to push corn under $3. That might happen. That might be later on this fall. But with crude oil and these energy markets strong, the outside markets strong, if these beans going to race to this 940 area, it's going to be awful hard for corn to drop too much lower below this 340 level. If these other markets are going to take off here until we get more confirmation on the crop size here as we go mid to late July.
Well, how much pressure does the wheat market put into the corn market when it starts to drop?
Well, we've got, man, just a ton of spread. It seems every half hour these guys are changing their spread psychology. But with the big technical reversals in the wheat, and that's what you call key reversal from mm-hmm. the school I've been brought up with, where we made a new contract high, closed below the previous day's low. That's a classic right there. Not only the daily chart did you see a key reversal, but you saw a regular hook reversal on the weekly chart, and there was one that did a weekly on the weekly chart, a key reversal. But technically, we're seeing some profit taking there. And I think we saw unwinding the spread, selling wheat and buying back beans, and selling the wheat and buying back corn, giving some corn support today, Todd.
What do you see in the livestock market for the day?
Well, looking at the August futures contract in the cattle, We're dealing with the board being premium to where the cash is. There was some spread activity in the cattle complex there. The thing is we need to watch retail clearance as we move through the summer here, see how much we move. Right now, the trade's comfortable with plenty of supplies of meat around. On the pork side of the equation, the hog and pig report, a few more numbers. In order to get real bearish the pork complex off that hog and pig numbers there, I think you got to see like a 1%, 2% increase. But overall, most of the numbers were just a little bit above expectations. The bearish thing probably from that report was with the threat of higher grain values, the livestock guys were hanging in there and expanding on the pork side.
And I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier, and I want to talk just a little bit about it. You talked about you now being able to trade some of those funds. What did you have to do to be able to do that?
Basically, you got to have a commodity account. Then that sets you up to be in there to be able to follow these CTAs, these trading advisories. Mm-hmm. First of all, you got to read the disclosure, the documents, to see if you're well qualified from it. But we've got track records here. These are solid track records. We've got seven different funds we're in.
Yeah, I guess the question was not whether you were in the funds. Did you have to do any training yourself to trade the funds? Do you have to have a different license than what you already have?
This is the commodity trading advisor side. This is not a stock mutual fund or anything like that.
Oh, this is the CTA side. Gotcha.
Yes, this is not the stock side.
This would be the license you already have. Is it a Series 3? Okay.
We're Series 3 registered, and we're governed by the NFFA and CFTC. But this is on the commodity side. It's a commodity account. These trading advisors do make recommendations. It's not a fund as a mutual fund. It's sort of like that,
mm-hmm.
but it's entirely different. It's a commodity account where we follow trading advisors' recommendations.
Okay, so it's a bit different than the index funds we talk about as well then?
Or is it? Yes and no.
Okay.
there are so many different funds anymore. You can go through the stock side of it, and then you can go through the trading advisor side. But, yeah, these guys do manage money. These are professional money managers. This one particular fund we're following has a 22-year track record. The shortest track record is over 5 years, so these guys have been doing a heck of a job, and we feel that's where customers need to look at is they diversify. There's agriculture, there's S&P options, there's financials, there's a global fund. You name it, our company is on top of it.
Okay, we appreciate you being with us.
Very good.
Hey, Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, talking a little bit about the Series 3 and the CTA, or the Certified Trade Advisors, there at the end of that, as we were trying to discover just a bit about how the changeover had been made and what kind of changes really had to be made. Apparently not too much for them to pick up those as a brokerage firm there at Grainfield. I was just kind of interested to see what it was that they needed to do, and that's just another service that he's picked up, and I imagine that most traders and brokerage firms will pick up over time as they get pressure out of Chicago as the open outcry disappears and more E-Trade takes place. So just kind of an interesting little fact to watch and follow, and we'll try to stay up with it right here on AM 580 as we go through the week and, of course, the trading years. Up in just a bit, we'll hear a little bit more about what's happening with the agricultural weather forecast.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
At the bottom of the hour, a meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own AM 580's Mike Sola. Forecast for tonight across the two-state region says in the north it'll be mostly cloudy. Elsewhere, partly cloudy. Lows will range from 54 in northeastern Indiana to 64 in western Illinois. And tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny. Highs between 85 and 90 degrees. Tomorrow, dew point temperatures will climb into the low 50s to the middle 60s. Minimum relative humidity levels will range from 35% in the east to 50% in the west. Wind speeds tomorrow out of the south at 10 miles an hour, sustained with gust up to 20 miles an hour in the north. The extended forecast for the two-state region, Illinois and Indiana, very warm, humid conditions will evolve by midweek. A cold front will bring showers and thunderstorms to the region on Wednesday and Thursday. Rainfall expected to range between a tenth of an inch and three quarters of an inch. The heaviest precip expected in eastern Indiana. Southern sections are expected to get the least amount of rain. A few locations could receive more than an inch from the individual storms. Now here's today's agricultural news. A report released by USDA and supported by the Nebraska Corn Board reveals that roughly half of the cattle and hog operations in a 12-state region either feed ethanol co-products or considered feeding them in their livestock this last year. Of the various types of co-products available to operations for feeding, corn gluten feed was used by 46% of the beef cow operations and 38% of the cattle on feed operations, while distillers dried grains were used by 45% of the dairy cattle operations and 44% of the hog operations. A majority of the cattle on feed operations purchased their ethanol co-products directly from the plant, while most of the rest of the growers get their co-products through feed companies or co-ops. Livestock operations that are not currently using ethanol or co-products indicated that availability is the primary impediment. Well, Friday, South Korea and the U.S. agreed on final changes to their pending free trade agreement. South Korean Trade Minister Kim Yong-chung and the U.S. Trade Representative Susan Swab were scheduled to sign that agreement over the weekend. The agreement reflects new U.S. guidelines calling for stricter labor and environmental standards for free trade deals. Speaking of trade deals, as Trade Promotion Authority, or TPA, approaches its expiration, U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns has expressed just how vital that so-called fast-track authority is to agriculture. Since a Trade Promotion Authority was authorized in 2002, U.S. agricultural exports have grown from $53.1 billion to $68.7 billion. Each $1 billion in agricultural exports supports 13,400 jobs throughout America, both on and off the farm. And finally, the president has taken the first step to remove the generalized systems preference benefits for super competitive products from several countries, including Brazil, India, and Venezuela. GSP provides duty-free access for products from developing countries, including in advanced developing countries, to the U.S. market. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL Urbana. I'm Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. Up next, U.S. laws and regulations regarding the use and distribution of genetically modified seeds are in place, but as you'll hear, there are still some international stumbling blocks. Farmers around the world plant genetically modified seed and have been for more than a decade. And while there has been a lot of public discussion in this area, the courts, especially in the United States, have been at the forefront of determining the validity of the intellectual property law that belongs to that seed. Brian Endres teaches agricultural law at the University of Illinois. He says the courts have done a remarkable job navigating the contracts on the back of each and every bag of GMO seed.
The law in that area is pretty well settled. There's been some court cases that have came out upholding all of the contractual restrictions, all the prohibitions against seed saving, and at least in the United States, intellectual property law regarding seeds is pretty well settled. Internationally, that's a huge issue.
An unsettled issue in developing countries and one that still causes problems for biotechnology firms. So, as the law goes, intellectual property is the first issue for biotechnology. The second is regulatory.
How does the government regulate for the environmental safety, health safety, for these new products that are coming out? The scientists are need to take steps in the lab, and they do, to make sure that these are safe for the environment and safe to eat and safe to feed to animals. But, you know, what's the process from a regulatory point of view where you go through field trials before you actually release this to, you know, thousands of farmers to be growing in every field?
The U.S. policy here is called the Coordinated Framework. The federal government of the United States has a coordinated, risk-based system to ensure new biotechnology products are safe for the environment and human and animal health. It was established as a formal policy in 1986 to integrate the EPA, the FDA, and the USDA.
So the FDA is looking at food safety as well as feed safety. The USDA is looking at, is this safe to grow? In other words, will it adversely impact agricultural productivity at some point. You know, is it a weed or is it a potential plant pest, is the regulatory jargon the USDA looks at. And then the EPA is looking at it, well, is this safe for the environment? And with respect to pesticides, residual pesticides that are incorporated into the plants, the EPA is the one who sets the tolerances for the food and the feed, pesticide residue levels.
It is the coordinated framework in the U.S. that has allowed companies to efficiently, safely, and effectively introduce new biotech products. It is the regulatory law that oversees biotechnology. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature.
On this Friday afternoon, we're joined by the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County to take a look at the cash grain market. Brian's on the line with us. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about what's been happening in the cash grain market after a pretty wild day on Friday. With the USDA report showing a 3 million acre drop in the beans and a 2.4 million acre jump in corn acreage.
Well, obviously the talk, Todd, is should have sold corn 10 days ago, but seems that it's hindsight's 2020. Obviously, we're faced with good weather conditions, timely rains in the eastern belt. Everything looks great. In reflection to the beans, obviously the board has showed explosion. You have a problem though with 600 million bushel carryout leading into this fall, and a tightening scenario going into next fall. We've got this glut in between. So naturally, new crop basis has been ugly. 15-cent decline on Friday, and I suspect that there's only more waiting to happen down the road. As long as we're going to look at an average to above average crop, this fall could be a logistical nightmare.
On the bean side, bean basis has not been good to begin with. Has it widened as well?
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. The corn basis hasn't dropped as much. The 15 cents I was referring to was the actual bean basis across the board. It hasn't been wide, and that's what I was kind of getting at, that you've got a large carryout going into this fall harvest. And, yes, the futures are propping themselves up because we're going to see this big drawdown, but it's not going to happen here, say, in the next 6 months. Probably after the first of the year when we start actually using that, will we actually see a reflection in bean basis. But it's going to be this kind of a transfer, a carryover, where it's going to look really ugly because all this extra corn is going to take up so much space that something's going to get squeezed out of the equation, and right now beans are the loser.
Yeah, forgive me. It was my fault. I was reading about Series 3 licenses as you were talking. That's okay. I was trying to do two things at once, so let's stay with the beans just a bit because we've had this discussion with Daryl Good just a bit and some others, and I want to see whether the folks at the Andersons have thought much about how the basis in the United States has reacted this year and what that means in terms of the way the division of corn and bean acreage, not here in the U.S., but between South America and the United States, with mostly corn here, mostly soybeans there, and whether this will be a recurring theme in the bean basis as we go through the fall season, where prices in Chicago might be bid up to encourage production in South America, but we might have a really wide basis in the United States.
Well, I agree with that. I think that's the exact scenario you're looking at. They're focusing on the South Americans planting when we're harvesting here this fall, and the need to, you know, get acres from somewhere, and obviously that division of us planting more corn and them taking care of the beans, I think that's what the futures market's trying to accomplish. But the basis, well, we don't need the beans, and we've got such a large supply domestically that the basis is just going to be ugly. In fact, Friday we saw basis on the spot cash market in Iowa come to close to a dollar under the July futures. So it's reflective across the entire Corn Belt, and I just I have a feeling that something's going to be squeezed out, because I think the key was that we planted 19% more corn acres this year, looking at the USDA's report Friday, and I know we didn't build 19% more space. And unfortunately, all of that's going to move during the fall time frame, and there just isn't going to be a lot of places to go with it. So it's going to be tough handling the grain in general, corn, beans, both this fall harvest.
Brian, we appreciate you being with us.
All right, thanks, Todd.
What are your bids before you go?
330 for cash corn. Fall is 322. Cash beans, 821, and fall, 848.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
All right, the folks at the Andersons join us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Monday afternoon. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agriculture weather forecast with the folks up at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Governor Blagojevich has signed a one-month budget meant to keep Illinois government operating while officials try to come up with a real budget. Blagojevich also called on lawmakers to support a budget, quote, reflecting our democratic principles. He says voters elected him and other Democrats last year to support education and provide better health care. The governor and legislative leaders have spent weeks in a deadlock over a new budget. The state's new fiscal year began yesterday. Without some sort of deal, the state would not have been able to pay its bills, so lawmakers approved the temporary spending plan last week. Defense lawyers at the terrorism support trial of former Chicago gang member Jose Padilla are pecking away at the credibility of the government's expert witnesses. Terrorism expert Rohan Guanaratne says he couldn't disclose details about some of his work because of secrecy agreements with unnamed foreign governments. His refusal to go into detail about his interviews drew protests from lawyers for Padilla and his co-defendants. They previously suggested that some evidence in the case came through use of torture on detainees. All three men are charged with being part of a support cell for Islamic extremist groups worldwide, including al-Qaeda. U.S. Senator Barack Obama reports raising at least $32.5 million for a presidential campaign in the past 3 months, a record for a Democratic candidate. The total reported yesterday by Obama is greater than what Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, Obama's main Democratic rival, has said she would raise for the same period. A fund to help veterans pay for nursing home residency or home care isn't used nearly as much as it should, so says one Central Illinois care provider. This week, Addis Healthcare is offering to help vets fill out the Veterans Administration paperwork for the so-called Aid in Attendance program, which has been in place since the 50s. Fireworks are sounding all across the area this week, regardless of the patchwork of laws against them. The deputy chief in the Champaign Fire Department says police will respond to complaint calls, but prosecution rarely goes beyond confiscating fireworks. Champaign allows only minor fireworks like smoke items, snap caps, and sparklers. But Tim Wild says sparklers account for most fireworks injuries in the city because of the intense heat they give off. Urbana forbids all fireworks. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. On this Monday afternoon, we're joined by Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
We could talk about these Monday and Tuesday first, but let's skip ahead to July the 4th. What do you see at this point?
Well, we see a risk of thunderstorms developing across areas of central Illinois, let alone at least portions of the central Corn Belt on that day, as a frontal system slides from northwest to southeast across the region. However, the activity looks to be more scattered in nature rather than anything widespread. So certainly by no means any kind of washout, although there's some risk here of, you know, half an hour of rain activity via the storm.
And it's just 77 degrees outside, a beautiful day here in central Illinois. Forecast for this evening, tomorrow?
Well, continue to be the same here, just very pleasant weather. We see dry weather actually from now, you know, through tomorrow, with that next chance of rain being on Independence Day, and along that, you know, near to even slightly below normal temperatures, with highs tomorrow climbing just into the low 80s.
And then if you look around the globe, what do you see, whether it's domestically or other places that are in trouble?
Well, as far as the trouble areas are concerned, still it's the Southern Plains hard red winter wheat belt, which continues to be on the active side and continues to be an issue for unharvested winter wheat across that area. Another trouble spot is areas of Western Europe, and that also has been a very wet locale here over the past few weeks, and similar to the U.S., that is delaying harvesting of winter wheat and threatening quality reductions of that unharvested winter wheat.
And and better check in on the Chinese corn crop for me.
Yeah, across that area, that's actually one area that's seeing improvement in crop conditions as that area has turned more active over the past several days. In fact, we've seen some of the biggest rain totals here in about 5 or 6 weeks across areas of northeastern China, right in the heart of corn country and soybean country in the Manchurian region. And that looks to continue over the next week's time frame. So that is the improving area in the corn and soybean sector.
Mark, we appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Monday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our pre-opening Mark Report. And remember, you can hear today's futures analysis, the cash grain report, and the weather right there on the web. Just go to willag.org. That's willag.org. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.